We're talking about pandemic resignations here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The latest jobs report out of the Labor Department, job openings, they surged to a record high in March, showing just how employers are struggling to fill vacancies as the economy recovers. It was a new high for the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, or JOLTS, that's been around since 2000. The quits rate, the rate of people who voluntarily left their job, held steady at 2.4%. But will pent-up resignations rattle the labor market? Are you planning to resign in coming months? What have you learned about yourself or your vocation? 800-642-1234. Anthony Klotz is an associate professor of management at Mays Business School at Texas A&M University, where he teaches courses in organizational behavior, HR management, and leadership. Anthony, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks, Kate.
Well, what led you to predict that there is a great resignation coming?
Well, that prediction was based on four trends that I was observing. First, over the last 15 months or so during the pandemic, it's been a time of great uncertainty for many of us. And so when there's uncertainty, we tend to stay put. And that's been the case with jobs as well. So according to that JOLTS survey that you just mentioned, resignations were down in 2020. Over 5 million resignations didn't happen that happened in 2019. And so there's some pent-up demand for quitting. Would-be quitters just stayed put instead of quitting due to the uncertainty of the pandemic. In addition, for only the second time in the last 35 years, personal debt decreased during 2020. And so a lot of people stay in their jobs only because they can't afford to leave. And many people can probably afford to leave now that they've had the time to save a little bit of money during the pandemic. And then a couple of more interesting reasons that I observed. One is that a lot of us have had time to do a lot of introspection and reflection on our lives and our well-being over the past year, and have come to the conclusion that maybe we would like to spend our time doing something other than our current job, whether that's going back to school, starting a business, pursuing a hobby, spending more time with family, and whatnot. And so I think people will start to make those transitions as the economy improves. And then finally, the big one, and maybe one of the most interesting, is that many of us got to experience remote work and working from home for the first time, and we really enjoyed it. I mean, humans have a fundamental need for freedom and for autonomy. And in a lot of cases, although it's not perfect, remote working provided us with that. And so as the economy opens back up, employers are starting to tell us that we need to come back to the office. And many people don't want to go.
Yeah, remote work, for better or for worse. And it also allows employees to say, hey, maybe I can do my job from anywhere, that I'm not just confined to looking for jobs in my city or in my area.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So employees can look for remote work across the entire world. And to your point, they can do work from anywhere. And so you've seen this boom of people moving to more desirable locations for them and really enjoying that they can do the work from there. And of course, that's not all bad news for organizations as well. That means if organizations have switched to remote work, they can recruit globally as well.
Yeah. So recruiting grows much more global. What does this reshuffling mean for the labor market? Will it happen all at once? Will there be some fits and starts?
Yeah. So I believe it will take place over the next year or two for a number of reasons. I don't think it's all going to happen at once because there's still a lot of uncertainty. Organizations and organizational leaders aren't sure the right way, the right mix to bring employees back to work, whether they go all remote, all in person, or some sort of hybrid format. And so I think companies are currently experimenting and will continue to experiment with different work arrangements over the next few years. Along with that, as human beings, we tend to be really bad at predicting how we will feel in a future situation. So for a lot of us who have enjoyed working in sweatpants over the last year, the thought of, you know, getting dressed up and going back in the office sounds terrible, and we don't want to do it. But then when we actually give it a try, it's like, oh, it's nice to get out of the house. It's nice to see coworkers again. The commute isn't as bad as I had imagined it in my mind. Traffic is lighter. And so I think we'll have a lot of self-discovery, and organizations will have a lot of discoveries as well. And I like that you use the term reshuffling. because that's what I think will happen over these next few years. Hopefully there's more options for everyone.
Well, in the latest surveys, too, employees really want a hybrid approach, maybe some days in the office here and there, but also being able to do their jobs remotely when, you know, if a schedule allows for that.
That's exactly right. And that gets back to that fundamental need that we have for autonomy. If what would I actually like? Well, I'd like the choice. I'd like to be able to wake up in the morning and decide whether I want to work from home or go into the office or work a half day. And clearly that's not possible in all jobs, but a lot of organizations are open-minded in that approach, or maybe just committing 2 to 3 days a week, please be in the office, and the other 2 to 3, you can work remotely. And I think that's appealing to a lot of us to have that choice.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Anthony Klotz, who's an associate professor of management at Texas A&M. We're discussing the potential for career shakeups as people make job changes post-pandemic and how this might unfold. Have you considered leaving your job in the coming months? What is your exit strategy and what introspection led you to this moment? Join in at 800-642-1234. Anthony, how has the pandemic changed the path to leadership for, especially for younger workers earlier in their careers?
So for younger workers early in their careers, I believe the path to leadership, some of the fundamentals of advancing in leadership haven't changed a whole lot. But in terms of embracing hybrid work, remote work, and I don't want to stereotype, but there is a thought that younger generations may be more adept at switching to that type of work. And I have seen a few articles come out that it said it may be the sweet spot are individuals who were born in the early 80s and have sort of experienced the pre-internet and the post-internet that may be able to adapt best to this hybrid world. But I think that's a research question that we still need to figure out. But as you pointed out, there are lots and lots of job openings. If you ask anybody who's worked for any amount of time, they'll tell you that there often seems to be more bad managers out there than good managers. And so I think the companies are always in need of strong leaders who are able to connect with their employees. And so I think the future is bright for individuals looking to get into a career in leadership.
There was always the sense, too, that, you know, more face time in the office might help you advance. But in this remote work world, you can't really see who's putting in the hours so clearly.
In most cases, you're right. Now, there are organizations, I'm sure some of your listeners have experienced this, that have put in monitoring systems in place. And so you have to leave on your whatever connectivity there is so that your boss can see you and see that you're working. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a great way to motivate your employees and help them flourish. But it is a challenge for employees. And there has been research over the last decade showing that when it comes to remote work, when it comes to virtual work, you need to put in more of an effort to stay visible. Because also those just walking down the hallway and running into your boss or running into your colleague and having some creative conversations and some networking conversations don't necessarily happen. Most of us are tired of these Zoom networking events by now. And so that is definitely a challenge, is to figure out how to stay visible while remote.
What have you seen in terms of people deciding to hang out their own shingle or going freelance, going into consulting? Is that going to be a trend post-pandemic?
Yes, I believe so. And it's because the pandemic has given individuals a chance to try out those different freelance and working on their own and seeing if they can make ends meet. And again, a lot of people's expenses were greatly reduced by the pandemic. And so able to try it out in sort of a low risk manner. There's a work arrangement where individuals combine work and travel called digital nomadism. So if you can work remotely, if you can freelance, you can travel the world. And that was gaining in popularity before the pandemic, and there's a lot of indications that that's sped up since.
Texas A&M's Anthony Klotz of the Mays Business School studies how people resign, predicts a coming surge as the pandemic subsides. There's pent-up need to move? Have you been working from home during COVID? What did you realize about yourself and family in remote work? Have you been a frontline essential worker in these times? Are you preparing to leave once you anticipate a new normal is around the corner? What was your pandemic epiphany? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Anthony Klotz on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the potential for a post-pandemic resignation boom as people rethink their work and their career goals. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Prudential, it published its Pulse of the American Worker Survey in April, polling 2,000 adults who work full-time. They found one in four plan to look for a new job when the threat of the pandemic diminishes. Roughly two-thirds of respondents said a hybrid workplace model is the way to go. Are you considering leaving your job? When did you start to feel this way? Has your job become stressful in the pandemic? What do you think of an epic turnover? When you talk with your colleagues, is it coming or is this overblown? Join in 800-642-1234. Anthony Klotz is in the management department at Texas A&M's Business School, studies turnover. He stays with us for the hour. So, Anthony, what is the right way to quit your job? What is the right way to resign?
That's a great question. And while, of course, every situation is unique, in general, probably the safest positive way to resign would be resigning in a way where you express gratitude toward the organization for what it has done for you, even if that's difficult to do. And what goes along with expressing gratitude is also realizing that turnover negatively impacts organizations and organizational functioning. And so before you resign, taking a step back and saying, how can I minimize the negative impact of me leaving on the organization, whether you want to or not? And so that could involve giving a longer notice period, volunteering to train your replacement, or just being an extra good citizen during your last few weeks on the job. But really trying to leave on the best note possible is the way to go. And there's a few basics as well. So making sure you have a short resignation letter ready and making sure you tell your boss as face-to-face as possible. So whether that's virtually or in person.
So, you know, in this electronic world, not just shooting off that letter, but really trying to have that conversation beforehand.
That's right. And so it can be really difficult on managers when an employee resigns, not only because of the disruption that I was talking about, but personally, it sort of feels like you're getting dumped again, like back in high school or something like that. It can be personally sort of disruptive. And so just getting a text of that or an email can make it even more harmful. And the other thing is it's hard to control the tone of a text or email. The receiver's mood at the time they receive an email impacts how they construe what is in that email. And so you want to make sure that you control the message when you resign. And it's much easier to do that face-to-face. And a face-to-face conversation can't be forwarded on to the rest of the company right away.
And what might that conversation be like with the employee who has decided to move on, who does plan to submit that letter of resignation? How should they talk about it with their supervisor, with their boss?
Well, I believe it's an exercise in self-control in a lot of ways, and less is more. So when you're an employee, most of the time that you're working for the organization has the power. You need the paycheck and they can let you go at any time. Once you decide you're leaving, that power balance shifts and you have the power. And often as individuals, when we gain power, our true colors show. And so we might be tempted to use that power to let our boss or our organization know what's been bothering us during the time that we've worked there. Instead, I would recommend kindness and expressing gratitude and keep the conversation short. You don't even have to explain why you're leaving, even though you'll probably be asked, but just express gratitude, let them know how much notice you're going to provide. And that's pretty much it.
People are also so curious where you're going, where you're headed. What would you say there?
Well, a lot of how your resignation conversation goes is tied to where you're going. And so if you're going to work for a competitor, be prepared for the company to escort you out almost immediately after you give your resignation. And not because they're being mean or anything like that, but it's because you're going to work for the competitor. Now, for some of those other reasons that I mentioned, the company will probably respond more positively. If you're going back to school to get a degree, if you're staying home with family, and so forth. And so you should think about the reason that you're resigning and think about, how is my boss going to react to this news?
We're talking with Anthony Klotz, an associate professor of management at Texas A&M. He's been predicting a great resignation as we hit a new normal in the pandemic. And your thoughts, did you hold off on quitting your job due to the pandemic? Do you have high turnover in your workplace? What does that do to? Do you think you can keep going in your job for another year? Join in at 800-642-1234. Anthony, you study the different ways people resign and their exit transitions, that period between that decision to leave and the physical act of, you know, leaving the job. Why is this exit transition period so important?
Well, it's important for a few reasons. Partly, it's important because it's difficult to navigate. I mean, when you put in your notice, all of a sudden you enter this strange space where you're no longer going to work for the company soon, but you're still working there for now. And so you're being closely watched in terms of what kind of performer is this person going to be during their last few weeks, during their last few months on the job. For many of your listeners, they're probably managers of other employees. And so if you're a manager, as soon as you put in your notice, your employees no longer have to listen to you as much. And so that can be very tricky to navigate. But from a purely personal perspective, one reason you may want to navigate this exit transition in a positive manner is because boomerang employees are very common, which means employees who leave and then come back to work a few years later in the same organization. And I think boomerang employees are going to be more and more common over the next few years, because you may leave your job because they're making you come back into the office after the pandemic. But what if 3 months from now, the company decides, actually, we are going hybrid? And you think, boy, if I could have gone back, if I could go back and work at that company again and be hybrid, I would do it. Hmm. Well, that's why you want to leave in the most positive way possible.
Do boomerang employees, though, have a bit of baggage when they come back? Or would you interpret that as leverage, having once worked within that organization already?
Well, from the organization's perspective, it's almost all positive when you bring back a boomerang employee. Because when you're hiring individuals, it's really hard to know whether they're actually going to be a good performer or not. I mean, the biggest predictor of future job performance is past job performance. And with a boomerang employee, you've seen their past performance. You know what they bring to the table. So you can make a pretty accurate decision on how they're going to be in the future. Now, what I think companies don't do a great job of considering when they bring back boomerang employees is the message that it sends to the rest of the employees. Because often that boomerang employee may come back into a job with more responsibility, with more pay, because they've gained this experience. And the remaining employees are like, is this the thanks I get for staying, that I'm not paid as well as the person who left for a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. So how do you navigate that with that boomerang employee and the people who have been faithful to their company in those positions and have not left the organization?
So I think the answer is pretty simple, and that's by rewarding the employees who stay. And there's a lot of discussion right now. I'm not an economist, but there's a lot of discussion right now that the reason that these labor shortages are cropping up is because wages and benefits have not kept up with company profits over the last 10 years or so. And so I think there's an opportunity to be, if you're an HR professional, if you're a manager, to be really honest with yourself. And if in this period you hire somebody for quite a bit more than you're paying your current employees, the right thing to do is bring up the pay and benefits of the employees who stayed and rewarding that loyalty.
Hmm. You know, you say end on a kind note, to hold back. Are there instances where perhaps being more blunt of an employer is okay?
Well, certainly there's reasons why you might want to be more blunt. I would just caution you to really think about it before you do it. And so say you're working for an abusive supervisor and you're leaving and a bunch of your coworkers are your close friends and you would like to make sure the organization knows that this supervisor is abusive. So that may be a time where you do talk to HR and say, this person, you're going to lose more people if this person continues to operate the way they do. But again, that can be fairly risky because you're leaving. And so it's easy for HR or your boss to interpret that as just being a bad soldier on the way out, a bad citizen. And so helping the people who stay at the organization, I think, is a good way to do it. And if you're going back to school or something like that, you can share how the company could support you.
As we talk with Anthony Klotz, we'll get more into that exit interview. Anthony, an associate professor of management at Texas A&M. Are you drafting a resignation letter or plan to talk with your boss about leaving? What will your future hold? What do you want to know about resignations and how to do them smoothly? Be part of this conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Anthony Klotz after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Is there a looming resignation boom? Will your career take a sharp left in coming months? We're talking about the potential for a so-called great resignation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Job openings, they hit 8.1 million by the close of March, the highest mark since the Bureau of Labor Statistics started its series tracking the stats in 2000. And as job openings soar, is this causing you to think about what else is out there? Do you plan to stay with your organization or look for a new job? Join in 800-642-1234. Anthony Klotz teaches management at Texas A&M, studies worker resignations, and he's predicting pent-up employee exits. He's with us for the hour. Don is close to retirement, and Don is in Madison. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just have, a quick question. I'm 60 and wanting to retire, but I'm not quite ready to pull the pin completely. I would like to drop the hours, but I'm not sure how that would affect, if I should just pull the plug completely or just say, 15-hour drop or 10-hour drop. How would I handle that with my manager? I've got a pretty good rapport with him, but I'm not quite sure how to handle that type of situation.
Anthony, what would you suggest?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Dawn. And I believe you're not alone in this situation where you enjoy your job, you're an engaged employee, but full-time is just not where you want to be right now. And unlike a lot of the rest of the world, in this country, we don't use part-time employment as much as we probably should. And there's a bit of a stigma sometimes around part-time employment. I think that will change over the next couple of years. And so there's some articles online you could look at where part-time employment is much more common in Europe and other parts of the world. And so that's probably where I would have the conversation with your boss. And again, keep it positive that you want to keep contributing to the organization and that you want to be a positive force on the organization. But 40 hours a week is a bit much because you have other things that you want to accomplish in time outside of work. And so open that part-time conversation. And often what we worry about with part-time is the loss of benefits. But I think more organizations, as these job openings continue to increase, are going to have to provide benefits for people who are working less than 40 hours a week. And so just opening that positive conversation with your boss, and there's a term called bridge employment. Lots of individuals take on part-time jobs to bridge them from where they are to where they want to be as they near retirement. And so thinking of it as like, how is this bridge where I can continue to contribute to the organization while at the same time taking care of my well-being? Hopefully your boss will see that as a win-win.
Don, do you see this happening at your organization where employees are doing three-quarter time or half-time?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Now, when I've mentioned this to several other employees, coworkers, they're like, yeah, I've been thinking about doing the same thing. So that's why I'm like the first one that's going to be starting the flow. And I said, okay, I'll let you know what the boss says. There's a whole group of us that will be retiring soon. And they're like, well, let me know what you know, they say.
Right. So I believe. I think in a lot of cases, and that's great that you have the courage to be the first one. As I've talked about this topic, this is on a lot of employees' minds. For bosses and organizations, especially small, medium-sized firms, a lot of what they're concerned about is kind of getting back online and getting back to normal. And so I believe there needs to be a pause where this conversation is surfaced. And how do we create a system that enables employees to flourish both personally and professionally? But also, we understand the constraints that the organization is facing. So let's have this conversation about how we create. So when I am here for my 30 hours a week, I'm as engaged as it gets. I am all in. But then the rest of the time, I can switch off. As opposed to if you're working 40 or 50 hours a week, and some of those hours may not be your best work because you'd like to be doing other things. So again, hopefully surfacing that conversation, other employees come forward and let's work with the organization to find a solution that works.
Yeah, you know, Anthony, that is also a real issue with part-time work, because part-time ultimately then suddenly means full-time, that you can't actually step back.
Yes. And so you have to make sure that your job description changes along with the part-time work. And so that what are the demands that I have on me in my job, and what portions of my job are going to go away? So in a lot of cases, this can be another opportunity. It's something that we call job crafting, where you say, you know what, 2/3 of my job I really like. This 1/3 is not my best work. I don't like it as much. And so how do we recraft this in a way such that I'm doing my best work for the organization? And that other 1/3 that I don't like, this coworker of mine loves that. And so maybe she can take that on. And again, looking for these win-wins.
Anthony, let's look more closely at exit interviews. You know, your company wants to do an exit interview. How should you approach it?
Right. So many organizations want to do exit interviews so that they can find the real reason that you're quitting. However, in most cases, employees don't tell the truth in their exit interviews, and for good reason, because they're skeptical that the organization is really going to improve, and they're afraid it's going to hurt their chance at having a positive resignation and be a boomerang employee potentially. And so organizations, a lot of them are realizing exit interviews aren't as useful as they think. And again, as an employee, I wouldn't say anything dishonest, but I would not be fully honest in the interview, because it can turn into you looking like a complainer, or it can also turn into this negotiation where you're ready to leave and you say, well, the reason I'm leaving is because I wasn't provided with development opportunities here. And the organization says, well, we have these development opportunities. You never took advantage of them. And you say, well, they weren't the right ones. And you get into this conversation that you don't want to have during the exit interview. So I think organizations, there's a few ways they can probably be savvier about how to determine the cause of an employee resignation, other than asking them as they leave, walk out the door.
Yeah. How can companies fully know then why employees quit? Where can they find that information if, you know, the exit interview isn't going to fully display that?
Yes. And so there's maybe a few tricks that they can use to figure out why an employee quit. The first step is having an open mind. Often when an employee quits, our first instinct is to think that person is leaving us. That person isn't the best person. Clearly, why are they leaving us? But realize most people leave their jobs because of the situation, not because of who they are, because they're working for a bad boss, because they feel they've been treated unfairly, or they believe that there's something better out there. And so what organizations should do is look at the ways that employees are quitting across their company. If they have a division of their organization where employees tend to quit in a really positive way, you can say, well, it's not great that they're leaving, but at least they're doing it in a way that it seems like they felt like we treated them fairly. if they see another part of their organization where people are just walking off the job from time to time and not coming back, where people are burning bridges on their way out, rest assured there's some bad or unfair management practices in that part of the organization, and you can investigate those. The other trick that I would mention is, instead of asking the employee who is leaving why they're leaving, ask that employee's coworkers, because they probably know why that employee is leaving. They're motivated to surface that information and have that conversation. And so instead of asking the leaver why he or she is leaving, ask the stayers why the leaver is leaving, and they'll probably give you more accurate information.
But do companies actually do that?
By and large, they do not. No. So you think, you mentioned that I call this exit transitions. I mean, think of how many resources organizations spend on onboarding, mm-hmm. hiring people and bringing them onto the organization. They pretty much completely ignore offboarding. So how do we actually take care of these individuals and learn about them on the way out? And so it's an opportunity for a lot of companies.
We're talking with Anthony Klotz, who is an associate professor of management at Texas A&M. He studies how people resign, predicts a coming surge of resignations as the pandemic subsides. You can join in. Did you hold off on leaving your job due to the pandemic? Do you have high turnover in your workplace? What are your colleagues telling you about their plans in coming months? 800-642-1234. Anthony, how would you suggest organizations look internally at their offboarding processes and really try to reinvent them? What would you say for them to do?
Well, probably the first step would be taking a look at resignations over the past couple of years and say, what information are we currently collecting about these resignations? And the answer is probably not very much. And there's probably not even many policies in the company handbook about what employees should do on the way out. And so this is why, when it comes to resigning, employees are often confused about the right way to go about it. And the company handbook should provide some guidance on what's the appropriate amount of notice, what's the right way to resign. And so those are some very basic things the organization can do. And then, you know, companies are becoming, you know, so great at collecting data about all aspects of their business. And so I think they could just ask themselves, what data can we collect when people resign beyond the exit interview? And I just mentioned a few ways. So really taking sort of a science-based approach to resignations and saying, how can we learn more? So when someone resigns, let's talk to their coworkers. It could be not in an unethical way, but it could be, let's look at this person's social media activity. Because when people resign, they often share things on social media about it that the company could learn from. And let's track the way in which they leave. When employees don't give a notice period and they just impulsively quit, you can learn something from that. And far too often organizations say, if somebody walks off the job, they're probably a bad person or a bad employee. In reality, something negative at the organization probably caused them to do that. And you need to figure out what it is.
Let's bring in Jolene joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Jolene. What is your question about resigning?
Okay. I'm 61, getting ready to retire. So last year I approached my boss and I said I wanted to cut back some. I was tired of the 50-hour weeks. And could they work with me on reducing my hours and that type of thing, you know, ease into this retirement thing? Well, my boss told me, Walt, if you want to cut back your hours and not work 50 hours, you have to find a different job in the company, which is probably third shift. And I'm like, no. So I'm about ready to retire. And how do I wouldn't mind working for the company, but I don't want to work for this boss. How do you approach that?
Jolene, thank you.
So this is a difficult situation. And just because your boss isn't receptive to it, I would say, doesn't mean other individuals in the organization might not be receptive to it. And so the first thing, I would look at other areas of the organization and see if there's any successful examples of individuals working part-time, and maybe use that evidence to say, we're doing it in other parts of the organization. It's it's always risky to go around your boss and talk to HR or maybe your boss's boss about these sorts of things. As much as possible, you want to keep your boss in the loop with that, but maybe ask him or her, you know, could I talk to some other people in the organization about this? If I put together a proposal for how I could reduce my hours and still, I think, provide a lot of value to the organization, would you be open to listening to it? And like I said, if you look online, there's lots of examples of organizations that are embracing part-time and hybrid right now. Now, there's a disconnect. There's more employees that want part-time and hybrid than there are employers that are offering it. But with this labor opening number, they're going to have to shift.
Texas A&M management professor Anthony Klotz studies the different ways in which workers resign. Have you had an epiphany about work in the pandemic? What did you discover? What's your next move? Are you going part-time? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Anthony Klotz on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Texas A&M Associate Professor of Management Anthony Klotz is with us. Recently, he made waves predicting a great resignation. He believes that many workers have gone through life-altering experiences in the pandemic, having aha moments, ultimately deciding to part ways from their work once the pandemic subsides. Companies call workers back to the office. Tom is joining us from Brookfield. Hi, Tom. What is your situation?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think it would be interesting to hear Anthony speak to the issue of keeping a job until you are actually made sick by the job and going through sort of a self-betrayal because you're in COVID. You have bills to pay and so on and so forth until such time as the job makes you so sick that you have to resign. And just the way organizations need to flex and be aware of those sorts of things. So in my situation, I did become ill and realized in the rearview mirror that I took the job in the COVID era because I felt as though I couldn't find something else. And I really had taken a job that was not a match for me. So that would be interesting to me. I'm sure there's other people that are either in that situation, passed through that situation, or might find themselves facing that situation.
Oh, wow. Tom, thank you. Anthony.
Yeah, great points and great question, Tom. During the pandemic, burnout and stress rates have gone way up for a lot of employees because of what's going on inside and outside of work. And as you point out, the link between burnout and stress and well-being is not just a psychological one, right? So burnout and stress cause physical illness and all sorts of other physical ailments. And so it's really important for organizations to realize what individuals are going through and that, yeah, they may be hanging on to a job that's not a good fit for them because of the uncertainty that exists out there. And I think this fits into a bigger conversation that employees should be having with employers should be having with employees right now, which is around their overall well-being. So in general, as human beings, we want to live a good life. And I think all of us would agree. I hope you have a good life and I hope I have a good life. And we define good life in terms of happiness and meaning and purpose in our lives. And during the pandemic, those aha moments that you mentioned, Kate, people are saying, to pursue happiness, to pursue well-being, I don't know if I can do that at my job anymore. There's these other parts of my life that I've neglected that will bring me happiness and purpose and meaning. And so this conversation, I believe, needs to happen between employees and employers. How do you feel? How are you doing? How is this personal well-being going? And if they have employees who are burning out, and most organizations do, they need to take steps right away to, like I mentioned earlier, recraft those jobs that people have to move it more towards something that they enjoy doing and can flourish, cut back hours, even like turn off the email servers at 5 p.m. so employees can't keep working in the evenings, recreating those personal and professional boundaries. But there's a lot of work that we have to do to take care of the burnout and the traumatic experiences at work that employees have experienced over the past year.
Tom, thank you for the call. Mike now in Madison. Hi, Mike. What is on your mind?
Good morning. I have to say, as a blue-collar worker, I'm a little frustrated to hear people complain about their first world George Jetson button-pushing finger problems. For most of us blue-collar workers, we don't have the option to, there's no retirement in the future for us. It's a paycheck-to-paycheck opportunity. And I'd like your guests to kind of comment on the difference between a lot of what he's been talking about so far and the majority of the U.S. population.
And Mike, specifically, and when you say blue collar, what specific industry, if you might add, that you work
in? I'm in the trades. So
you're in the trades.
Working on people's houses who sit at home all day, spend time with their kids and their pets, and complain about how rough life is when I can't put a roof on your house from home. I can't put an addition on your house from home. And I can't even miss a week's worth of work without...
Because you miss that income.
The pandemic has really crippled us blue-collar workers really hard. We don't have savings to rely on or the opportunity to even think about looking for another job.
Mike, thank you. Anthony.
So I really appreciate the points you're making in your question. And part of this conversation is a bit of a privileged conversation, not only in terms of white collar versus blue collar, but also in terms of the United States versus a lot of other places in the world that are either still dealing with the pandemic or there's just not the opportunity to do this. But I think organizations would be remiss if they didn't recognize the strain that blue collar workers are under and really have a lot of the same conversations that we're talking about here. So working from home is clearly not an option for the work that you do. But in terms of the hours you work, in terms of the pay, in terms of the benefits, I think these all can still be addressed and need to be addressed by organizations. Look, like I said, a lot of organizations are thriving during the pandemic and doing quite well. And it's time for them to share the benefits that they're gaining from increased customers, increased demand with their employees. And so more companies, even companies with blue collar workers, are looking into, can we give these employees more time off? Can we even give them a sabbatical at times? And so I can imagine the frustration of seeing all these individuals working from home, spending time with their families while you're working on their houses. But I would really hope that the leaders of blue collar organizations recognize that frustration and say, and instead of just saying there's nothing we can do because these people can't work virtually, saying, what can we do to make our workers happier and more productive at work?
Well, I think it also routes back to what you said earlier about wages and benefits just not keeping up with corporate profits.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so, yep, from pay to all sorts of benefits, there's opportunities here. And companies who want to win the competition for talent out there are going to get creative about wages and benefits and treat employees well.
Anthony, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Anthony Klotz is an associate professor of management at the Mays Business School at Texas A&M University, talking about the big resignation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.